Chase McKay, Mark Howard in for Jared today on Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. We're at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. The Nashville Predators in action last night and the night before, back-to-backs against the Chicago Blackhawks, and they needed more than 60 minutes both nights, had to go into overtime in night one, had to go all the way to a shootout last night. And I know there's a lot to dissect about these two games, but Mark, as they say, a win is a win. They got the 4 points. Yes, Chicago got two, but the fact that Nashville was able to walk away with those W's, you will take that for sure.
Absolutely. And I got a little nostalgic last night, Chase, watching the power play, remembering the inept power plays of years past, and this becomes one of them. They were 0-for-4 last night.
They were, and
just didn't look very good with the man advantage. Their penalty kill, they stepped it up and got a lot more aggressive and looked a lot better. But their power play again looked terrible.
Yeah, between the two games, they only gave up the one power play goal. So that's good. That's obviously an improvement between, you know, what they had against Dallas. But the power play, I'm with you. I sat last night doing the game from the arena and actually, you know, being able to be there. I sat and I watched almost every power play chance that they had, trying to see with my non-coach, just a fan eyes, to see if I could figure out, all right, what do they need to do different? They've changed up some personnel, but it does seem like that they go out and they're trying pass here, pass there, shot from here, shot from there, and nothing just seems to be working. And they get the shots on net, but they're not those quality shots that are going in. And it's just been a problem that has plagued them now for the last couple of years. And, you know, we talked about it the other day that they brought in Dan Lambert to try and help that. You have a new head coach. You have two new assistants that are trying to bring ideas. And for whatever reason, they just can't make it work. And I'll say it for this season, like we've said it for years past, if you don't get the power play figured out, you're just not going to go very far. You have to have a power play unit that's going to be able to score for you. You can't. I mean, we saw what happened a few years ago against Dallas in that playoff series. They couldn't get a power play goal, and they got knocked out. And I just am not feeling confident about that this early on in the season. Do I like the 5-on-5 play? Yeah, I do. Do I think that Matt Duchene is a sleeping giant that is about to wake up? I do. I like the way he's playing. Just hadn't been able to put it in the back of the net outside of the shootout. But you got to figure out the power play.
Well, you are a guy brimming with optimism. With all due respect to Dan Lambert, who says he thinks about the power play, you know, all the time, and I'm sure he does. He thinks about how bad the power play is. Matt Duchene, you might call him a sleeping giant. I might call him Rip Van Winkle because he has a habit of taking long naps. I think it's, you know, talking about the Predators right now, they're 4-3. And, you know, things look, you know, pretty good, you know, in a central division where nobody has really pulled away or gotten off to a great start. But it's almost like talking about the Titans. They are 9-5, but they can't sack the quarterback. The Preds are 4-3, and Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, as of Monday, had the most scoring chances without scoring this season, and it continued over the two games with the Blackhawks. It's just so vexing to see this team with a bunch of guys who can't finish. You see good opportunities around the net, good scoring chances that just, you know, end up nothing. And it's very frustrating to watch this team. You know, Nick Cousins with a goal, yeah, that's great. But if the top six, if you can't get more production out of Duchene and Johansson, it's going to be an awfully long off season.
Yeah, because you paid those guys a lot of money. And that's where it falls on David, because David Poyle signed them to the contract. Yes, the players have to produce. It is on the player to do something. And that's what you're waiting to see. So I get it. You know, I watch Duchesne, and Duchesne is going to be those that one of those just until he just starts scoring in bunches. It's going to be one of those arguments where you're going to have one side like, yeah, I'm seeing him make good plays and he's getting the good chances. They just haven't fallen for him yet. They will. I guess I'm more on that side.
You know who Matt Duchesne is?
Who?
He's Jadeveon Clowney on skates. You can sit there and tell me all the talent he has and he does this and he does that. But his bottom line, most oftenly, is oftenly a word, most often looks unsatisfying. And I hate to see that, because I was a big Matt Duchesne fan. And I know he's talking about he's putting all this pressure on himself. Well, at the end of the day, we want to see the baby. We don't want to hear about the labor pains. We want to see the baby. We want to see those goals. And I don't want to hear how hard you're trying, because you're supposed to be trying. I just, after a while, that kind of talk wears me down.
Yeah, and I understand. You're in the boat with a lot of people that feel that way. That's like, just show me. Look, stop almost getting there and show me. So with that said, do you think that he can? Do you think that he can finish? And, you know, maybe last night the – because, I mean, there are those guys that once they break through, yes, it was in a shootout, it was a breakaway, sure, but that maybe it's a confidence boost and they start falling for him. Do you think that that happens?
I think Matt Duchesne is about a year away from either being a guy who has realized his potential or a guy who has absolutely teased us to the end and walks away with a lot of money. And I'm not saying that, you know, he does this willingly. That may just end up being the story of his career. But a guy who at times could wow you, but then at the end of the day, when you look at his numbers, when the dust clears, you feel very unsatisfied. And that's sort of the case with Johansson. You know, had the great year in Columbus, and he has satisfied Preds fans and tortured Preds fans alternately with his fits and starts. I love the way Johansson plays when he's got his A game. But then there are other times, as we know, he overpasses. He's like uninterested. It's hard to figure out, you know, with his motor. You look at Duchesne, you look at all of Duchesne's tools, and it should add up to being a 30 or 40 goal scorer, but we often don't get that.
My thing on Johansson is I don't think he's ever going to be what he was in Columbus here, because he has Forsberg and he has Arvidsson. That if he's distributing the puck and he's making a play and they're finishing, then I'm totally fine with that. Like, I know he's making a lot of money and I know you want to see a goal production, but to me, he's helping the team by distributing to these two guys on the wing that should be burying the puck in the back of the net. Duchesne, yeah, he's a little bit different, because that second line, you're still trying to find him the right complement, the right piece. And plus, I do want to see some goals scored from up the middle. I mean, there are centers that do that all the time, Sidney Crosby. So he needs to make that happen. But I just think with Johansson having the 30-goal year like he had in Columbus, I just don't see that happening here.
Yeah, I sort of get the sense that when Columbus was here and Tortorella's behind the bench and he's looking at Johansson, and he's thinking, you know what, I know that guy. And he looks at Seth Jones and he goes, but yeah. Hey, you know, Joey took him to the Stanley Cup final, and that will forever make this not a horrible deal. I don't know. I'm perennially optimistic that Johansson will find it and get the right coach. You know, who gets him connected enough to where we see his total game. But I agree with you. I mean, as long as he's distributing the puck to Arvi and to Forsberg, then, you know, he is at least doing his job. But I'd love to see him overachieve at least 1 year.
So there's a question on the text line that we're going to answer when we come back, because it's along the lines of finding Duchesne, his Forsberg, or his Arvidsson. We'll do that when we come back. It's Stillman & Company, Chase McKay, Mark Howard, in for Jared today on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This season, you've been extremely strong at carrying the puck into the offensive zone in transition. Has that been a focus for you over, you know, over the summer and training camp? And is that something you want to continue to get stronger at?
Well, I mean, that's a big part of my game when I'm playing well. And I've been, you know, feeling very good this year, despite the tough breaks and probably not having the production that I deserve. And a lot, that can be said for a lot of guys on our team. Guys are playing good hockey and we're still finding ways to win, which is important. Our record is probably as bad as it could possibly be for how we've played. So yeah, for me, I just feel confident and I feel good and I'm playing free and loose. And for me, it's just coming in, I'm focusing on playing good away from the puck first and just doing whatever it takes to win games. And, you know, some nights it's for me, as an offensive guy, it's a lot of nights it's going to be providing offense, but you know, other nights it's about blocking shots, you know, hitting guys, when it presents itself and being on the right side of the puck. So that's been my first thing. And then offensively, I'm just letting it flow and not thinking too much.
Matt Duchesne after the Preds 2-1 shootout win over the Blackhawks last night. Chase McKay, Mark Howard here on Stillman Company today in for Jared Stillman. He hopes to be back tomorrow. So we were talking about in the last segment, Mark, of Matt Duchesne, his role, where he's at. He talked about, you know, when he's playing well and pushing the puck into the zone. And, you know, I'm more on the side of, I do think he's playing well. He's just, he's got a score. Those aren't following. The goals aren't falling yet. But we had a question on the text line. Tyler from Berry Hill on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Is there any chance the Preds can get another scoring option for the second line to pair with Duchesne? That continues to be our glaring weakness. You have Mikhail Granlin, and they've worked Luke Cunningham in there, Eric Halla. I think that the answer, at least trying to find the answer, is currently on the taxi squad. I want to see him with Elli Tolvanen. I could be completely wrong. It could blow up. Elli Tolvanen may be just a bust, and maybe he's not going to be the player that everybody hoped he would be, but at least try, because they spent all summer talking about how, you know, David Poile several times brought up that he would like to see Tolvanen with Duchesne on that second line, see how those two work. And then they end up signing all these forwards, which, again, I didn't necessarily disagree with. They need more grit, and they needed some extra forwards just in case they lost some due to COVID. And so now Tolvanen's on the outside looking in. They just sent Tomasino to Chicago of the AHL, and you have Tolvanen just playing on the practice squad. Why not try it? Why not see if that combination clicks? Because I can remember several years ago when Philip Forsberg was first coming in, they put him with a veteran center in Mike Ribeiro, and they found magic. Why can't that happen with Duchesne and Tolvanen?
Yeah, I'm asking the same questions, Chase, and you come to the inevitable conclusion that there has to be a reason. If he hasn't played yet, how he looks in practice and how he looks to the coaches. And if he doesn't look even good enough to roll out there on the ice, that's got to worry you a little bit. I mean, I know we're only, you know, 7 games in, but I'm a little surprised that we haven't seen Tolvanen. But I also think at the same time, it tells you where he is in the estimation of the coaching staff and the organization.
Yeah, and that is a concern, because I can remember 3 years ago, almost 2 years ago, we're talking about, okay, here he comes, this draft pick, very, very talented. You know, we talked the other day about the KHL, and, you know, maybe that's not the best development ground. And then he went back this year to play during the pause. I mean, I understand that all of that is there, but now I think you just got to see it. And I know 56 games, and it's a tight division. You're playing division opponents every night, so the experiment time is just not necessarily there. But if he's on the roster and what you have is not working the way that you want it to, why not give it a shot? Mikhail Granlund's played great since he came into the lineup. I've been very impressed with Mikhail Granlund. Obviously scoring goals, doing his job, but the fact of the matter is you've moved Forsberg around some to try and get, you know, make that work with Duchesne. It's just, you got to find the wingers that Johansson has been able to have. You got to do that on your second line. If you do that and you have two top scoring lines, which is the definition of a top six, then I think we're having some different conversations about the Predators as a whole and maybe even the power play.
Well, I believe, in fact, I'm positive that maybe as we speak, you know, John Hines is meeting with David Poile or meeting with his coaching staff, and they're talking about what they can do to maybe inject a little bit more offense into this team. And it might include Tolvanen. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I loved, you know, how Granlund looked, especially the first game against Chicago. And, you know, I kind of remarked, I think it was to you, that he could alternately be, you know, a major answer to a trivia question, you know, who was part of one of David Poile's worst deals and at the same time, best free agent signings, you know, so that could absolutely end up being Mikhail Granlund. But there could be a lot of answers to your question. Tolvanen is one. We'll see if we see Tomasino at all this year. You know, they've sort of slowed the youth movement within the organization. So, you know, again, we could see a little bit of a revolving door with that second line.
And I feel like I know a lot of fans are upset because they were excited about the youth movement. And I was one of them excited about the youth movement. But I get it. In a condensed season, 56 games, playing almost every other night or back-to-back nights like we just saw, playing your division where every point is even more important than it has been before, you do rely on that veteran leadership. Unfortunately, it's not the best time to start a youth movement and actually be a contender. So there's finding that balance. I agree with the decision. If you're not going to use Tomasino, and David Poile said it on Darren Donick and Chase the other day, that, you know, if we can't find a way to get him in the lineup soon, we're probably going to send him to Chicago of the AHL so he can play. I think that's very important. And you may come to the conclusion that you got to do that with Tolvanen soon. I mean, you're not going to learn you learn the most by playing the games. That's just, you can pick up stuff in practice, and practice is important, and I get all that. But actually playing in competitive games where it matters is where you're going to pick up the most. And I look at Tolvanen, and part of me just thinks, while, yeah, I may be contradicting myself with what I just said of you don't have time to necessarily experiment, I kind of think throwing him into the fray, putting him next to somebody like Duchesne, is where you're going to see the success.
No, I agree with you. And I think, you know, sometimes – you know, we'll sit there and come up with a logical reason to put a guy in. But I'm like you. I want to see Tolvanen. I want to see Tomasino. I think you can have your cake and eat it, too. You can try to compete for a playoff spot. But at the same time, you want to start working in some of these younger players. But I also, at the same time, and at the risk of contradicting myself, understand the organizational philosophy, and that is they want them ready. Because you send them out there sometimes, it can destroy their confidence. So we'll see what happens.
I'm a walking contradiction. It's okay, Mark. It happens. It's what we do. 615-737-1025. Another texter on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caleb, and I would love for you to expand a little more on this, Caleb. Am I the only one who thinks Ellis is really lacking in his game? I don't see that. I see that I think that defensemen on this team are playing more like defensemen, and they're not as involved in the offense as we're used to seeing under Peter Laviolette. It's more of the, you know, defensemen have always had a role on this team in this organization, even back to Barry Trotz. But, you know, that's why I think you've only seen Roman Josi score a goal from defense this year. You're seeing them having to play more of a defensive type game and setting up plays from the point rather than actually being the offense and bringing the puck in.
Yeah, I think that's silly. I think defensive play at times can be very subtle. And I think a lot of times Ryan Ellis just keeps it simple, simple and subtle. And I think that's the best way oftentimes to handle that position. You're seeing that with Dante Fabro. It's I know that Hal Gill has talked about that, just making the simple play. I think Ryan Ellis is an elite defenseman, and I will yell it from the rooftops that this guy overcame, a major injury to his knee, and has really bounced back and regained his form.
Yeah, I feel like Ryan Ellis with Preds fans is always going to be one of those guys that makes me, you know, and I mean this from how the fans talk about him, make me want to hit my head against the desk, because I think he's played hard, you know, since the contract, since before the contract. He's battled some injuries. I've never had an issue with the way Ryan Ellis plays the game. I think Ryan Ellis is exactly what you want on this team, and it, for some reason, he's just that people. There are some people that look at him and they're like, "Oh, he's not worth it. He's not he sucks. You need to trade him." What are you seeing? That's my question to some of these fans.
Well, some of these fans just feel like, they equate, defensive scoring, as being very important, and I would contend that it's equally or maybe even more important to keep the puck out of the net for a defenseman than putting the puck in the net. So I would strenuously object. And I would say, I will never question Ryan Ellis's effort. I'll question his fitness sometimes through his career when he was playing hurt and wasn't playing well. But I will never question his effort.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So the Predators have a two-game series at the Tampa Bay Lightning starting tomorrow. We'll have pregame for you at 5 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and then also another one on Monday against the defending Stanley Cup champions. When we come back, Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman. Today, is Josh Heupel the right guy for right now at Tennessee? We will discuss that. Teron Davenport coming up at the top of the hour here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
When you sort of look at this roster right now, what is your message to guys that are, considering going in the portal and guys that are already in there? And of course, could you envision a scenario bringing players from UCF here?
We'll not recruit players off of a roster that I was a part of. Don't believe that's the right thing to do. To the current members of this football program and this roster, we need to be a family. We need to act like a family. And everybody's got a different perspective based on their background of what a family is at times. When you sit in front of your team and there's 105 guys, in front of you, everybody's got a little bit different perspective. But at the end of the day, a family to me is defined when push comes to shove, that family stays together. Let's stay a family.
Josh Heupel at his introductory press conference yesterday up in Knoxville as he has become the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. Welcome back in to Stillman and Company. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today. It's delivered by TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Why is Josh Heupel the right guy for right now at Tennessee? I know that everyone is immediately going to say, well, he wasn't the first choice. Well, of course. They weren't going to get the first choice. I don't even know who the first choice was, and we probably never will. That's just the brass tacks when it comes to the state of the Tennessee program right now. But the fact of the matter is, in 3 years at UCF, he went 28-8. Yeah, he inherited a good team. Scott Frost had built something really special there. Danny White, the athletic director, of course, a big part of that. He went 1-2 in three bowl games. Okay, whatever. I don't put a lot of stake into that. But he had a successful run at UCF, no matter how you want to look at it. 6-4 this year. But he also lost some players with COVID and had some players leave. So you have to factor that in. I think that he's the right guy for right now because he used that word family, and I think he's going to make this a family again. It hasn't been one in a while. Now you have to win on the field. His offense is going to be fun to watch. He's got to have the right players to run that offense. That's going to take some time, whether it's recruits or going to the transfer portal. He said he's not going to recruit players from UCF. They can make their own decisions if there's some that end up coming to Tennessee. It's all going to be a process, but if he can build this into a family first and change the culture, actually establish a culture, let's put it that way, establish a new culture, then I do believe he's the right guy for the right job. But that goes back to my points that I've been making for the last 2 days, Mark, of you got to let it play out. Nothing's going to happen overnight.
I'm not so sure. Sorry, my dogs heard something.
They don't agree with me.
I'm not so sure. I know. It's just, listen, welcome to my life. I'm not so sure that culture was a huge issue here. You didn't hear a lot of players complaining about playing for Jeremy Pruitt. But I will say that the hand-wringing over Josh Heupel, it's understandable. I think that that Danny White, in the back of his mind, realized that maybe Heupel, was a fallback when they spent $120,000 on a search firm. And, they end up with a guy that he could have brought with him, right when he came to Knoxville a week and a half ago. But, I think a few things about Heupel, first of all, you can look at his record and say that Central Florida or UCF was declining. He started the year with 10 key opt-outs. He wasn't the only coach, but there were some mitigating circumstances. You can point at the fact that he got fired by his coach, Bob Stoops, at Oklahoma. They still had a top 20 offense the year that he got fired. And Stoops often, Stoops wrote about it in his memoir that was the worst day of his coaching career when he had to fire Josh Heupel. And those around Heupel say might have been the best thing that ever happened to him. So I understand the knock on him as not an elite recruiter. We're going to find that out here. He has been in the SEC, though. He was at Missouri. So he does understand the landscape in this conference. Now, specifically at Tennessee, very demanding for a guy who didn't suffer fools gladly with the media in Orlando. It's going to be the Vols are covered like an NFL team. But the thing that I like about him coming to Knoxville, Chase, he's going to do it a different way. That offense that he's bringing, there are a lot of misconceptions. It's not really pass heavy. They're pretty balanced, in fact, with the run and the pass. They do run up tempo. They like to spread the field out. And unlike Jeremy Pruitt, who seemed to be trying to do it like Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, but not as well, he's going to have his own distinctive offense. And, he's going to try to bring exciting offensive football to Knoxville. So I'm going to give him a chance.
Well, and that's something they haven't had in a while. I mean, that's what the fans want. The fans want to see high-octane offenses that score a lot of points and, run a lot of plays. I think I saw a stat that he at UCF, they averaged about 84 plays a game, whereas Tennessee was about 60-something on offense. I mean, that's obviously going to get some excitement there. Now, you're going to have to play defense because you can't turn around and give up as many points as you're scoring. That's where finding the right defensive coordinator to build that side of the ball is going to be very important to him. And I know we batted that around of, do you keep Kevin Steele? What happens there? There are some reports that he has already started assembling his staff in his first full day and that it'll include some members of his staff from UCF, as you fully expected. He talked about that yesterday to have conversations with members of the current staff at UT and also with some of his guys from UCF. So tight ends coach Alex Golish, offensive line coach Glenn Ellerby, quarterbacks coach Joy Hazel, likely names to join Heupel, according to 24/7 Sports. So also the director of player personnel, Brandon Lawson, could be a part of that as well. But that's all offensive side of the ball. He's got that side covered. He can develop whoever the quarterback is going to be. If it's Harrison Bailey, then great. Develop him, make him the guy on that side of the ball, and then try and find weapons through your recruiting class and players that are still there, players that are ready to step up because of the guys that left. It's the defense that he's going to have to entrust somebody to make the defense effective to make that offense be exciting. Everybody, you know, get behind it, and they put up a lot of points and have whoever your defensive guru is stop the other offense.
Well, I think the offensive skill people who are still at Tennessee or who are coming in have to be excited because they're going to be part of an offense that's going to be pretty high octane. Otherwise, has anybody made a sweeter deal than Kevin Steele? If they don't include him on the staff, he came in for a few weeks and made $400,000. You know, we should all fail up like that because Kevin Steele can walk out of the building and get a job somewhere as a position coach and maybe even a coordinator. So none of us know yet if he's going to be a part of this new staff.
Yeah, what is your overall view of him as a coach? We know the things that happened at Auburn, and it didn't work out for him to get the job, and then he comes here, and you kind of, you know, raise some eyebrows on that whole deal. But just him as a defensive coach, how do you view him?
He's a good ball coach. He's rock solid. He'd be a great linebackers coach, and as a defensive coordinator, he did a good job at Auburn. The only thing was, I think a lot of people felt like he stabbed Gus Malzahn in the back at his first opportunity. He tried to get that job. Kevin Steele has already been, you know, at Tennessee way back in the day, way back on the other side of his career. There are some funny stories about him at Fellowship of Christian Athletes gatherings, confessing to things that Johnny Majors probably didn't want him to at Tennessee, but that's a whole other story. But Kevin Steele is a solid coordinator. I don't think he was ever going to be the head coach. I think he was dreaming after his debacle at Baylor. But yeah, I mean that's a guy who knows the SEC, who had good defenses at Auburn. And would be a solid hire, again, whether he's the coordinator or if he's a linebackers coach.
There's one Vol for Life that was on the coaching staff that some of his former teammates are speaking up for. We'll discuss that when we come back here on Stillman & Company. Chase McCabe, Mark Howard, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We left no stone unturned. We talked to head coaches. We talked to coordinators. We talked to long-seasoned coaches, talked to young up-and-coming coaches. Character and integrity were extremely important from the jump. Told you guys that last week and will continue to be. I have zero questions about that with this guy. We want to build a program that we can all be proud of. And after vetting every single option we had, obviously landed with a familiar face in Josh Heupel. He was our number one option. This job was offered to one person. I know that there's a lot of rhetoric out there to the contrary, and that's just not true. We made one job offer. We got our number one candidate. I couldn't be more proud to have Josh as our new head football coach.
Tennessee Athletic Director Danny White yesterday saying one offer, one guy, Josh Heupel. Stillman & Company, Chase McCabe and Mark Howard in for Jared Stillman today. So I know we've talked about that. You know, do we really believe that one guy, one offer, all of that? I don't know. And it doesn't matter at this point because Josh Heupel is the head coach. But there's a lot going on social media, especially of VFL's former players, teammates of T. Martin speaking up on T. Martin's behalf. And it kind of started with Peerless Price, who we all remember from that national championship run and just how great of a player he was. He tweeted, quote, "Just got off the phone with my quarterback, T. Martin, and to say my guy is hurting is an understatement. My brother, if my vision was ever clouded, I have clear sight on everything you've sacrificed for our university. Damn the pain in my brother's voice I've never heard before." And the assumption there was that I guess T. Martin didn't get interviewed for the job. Now, there's more on this that in Price responds to a tweet saying your assumptions are funny. You assume that I was speaking of him wanting to become head coach at Tennessee. That assumption is funny. So we don't really know exactly what it's about because he had a verbal agreement with Philip Fulmer on a 2-year extension with a raise. He's not signed that, according to Jimmy Himes, after the investigation and search for a new AD that all held everything up. So who knows if T. Martin's even going to be on the staff with Josh Heupel. I would assume that he won't be. But I don't know if I get it. You're sticking up for your teammate. I don't think T. Martin's all that great of a coach. I would never have thought of him being a candidate to be the head coach with Tennessee. Maybe staying on the staff, maybe give him a shot at being a coordinator. It's nothing against him. I don't think he's a good coach.
I don't know if he's not a good coach, but
not yet, I should say.
I just sort of feel like just because T, and listen, he has been suitably honored for what he did on the field, for leading this program to a national championship, something, frankly, Peyton Manning couldn't do, which included beating Florida. But at the same time, this notion that T. Martin should be a head coach at Tennessee, to me, is ridiculous. He was a coordinator for 5 minutes. He's a good position coach, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I understand that within the coaching profession, there aren't enough black head coaches. There might not be enough upward mobility for black coaches. But, you know, T. Martin never came close to becoming a coordinator at Tennessee, and you would think he would have had every opportunity to. So I agree with you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a good position coach, but maybe not a good head coach. And he, especially this time, being part of the previous regime was not going to be a plus. And you've got an athletic director coming in who wants to hire his own guy. I just don't see it. And it's great that, you know, that Peerless Price and Albert Hainsworth are taking it upon themselves. But I don't know what they're expecting out of Tennessee. If T had glowing credentials as a coordinator, then I'd say he's got a much better chance. And let him ascend to that level, and maybe we're talking. I don't know why they didn't mention Jay Graham. Jay Graham was a lot more in demand than T, but that's just my opinion. So, and that's a guy who's Vol for life and all that. But, you know, the time would have been the first time when T came from Southern Cal, and it was pretty noticeable. They wanted him on staff, but they definitely didn't want him to be the head coach. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but this time around, to me, he wasn't even on the radar.
I mean, he interviewed for the South Alabama job and didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know, it just – and then you're going to sit there. And I understand. Defend your guy, defending your teammate. But the thing that has always, I guess, kind of boggled my mind with Tennessee, and it's the fans and it's former players, is, you know, just because you went there and just because you played there doesn't automatically qualify you to be the head coach or in any kind of, you know, important position. If you work your way up and you are truly qualified for it, then sure, I think you should get interviewed. You should get a chance. But as you said, you know, and when I'll take it back. Good position coach, fine, but he's not at that point where I'm even thinking he would be a good head coach, that it would be a good hire. And Tennessee had to make a good hire, and it's got to play out with Josh Heupel, but it would appear that, you know, there are certainly worse names out there, and they got a guy that had 3 years of success at UCF, and now he's their head coach. Now, you brought up Albert Hainsworth. As for what he has said, he took it a different direction. He said, quote, and he put this on his Facebook page, "I bring race into it because UT has passed over good qualified black coaches like Kippy Brown and others in these past coaching searches. Majority of your players are African-American. Why not put an African-American coach to lead them, especially the one that won Tennessee a championship? You guys give everyone except black qualified coaches a chance. With that said, I will not be attending any games or supporting until I see a change in the university that I love so much." This is obviously an issue right now. You've had it in the NFL. It's been a big talk of more African American coaches, more minority coaches. I don't think this was the case here with what Albert Hainsworth is saying. He's certainly entitled to his opinion, and But it goes back to me of Danny White coming in, and he's just trying to find the right guy for the job. And this is a guy that he knew and knew could do the job well, and he made the decision, made the hire. I don't think race has anything to do with it. That's just my opinion.
Well, I don't know. You know, first of all, Albert's right about Kippy Brown. Kippy Brown should have been treated better, should have been given, you know, more consideration. But you know, Albert doesn't know, and I don't know who was asked and who wasn't. But Tony Elliott,
Bingo.
Who's black, was certainly one of the first names mentioned for this job, and he didn't. He apparently wasn't interested. So that's not entirely true. The problem is, you know, there aren't enough coordinators of color, and hopefully that will begin to change. But I don't think, you know, just because you've got a preponderance of black players that you need a black coach. It would be nice if the best candidate turns out to be black. But in this case, I'm not really, you know, if Tony Elliott didn't want the job, Charlie Strong in the past turned down the job.
Yeah.
So Albert ought to study his history a little bit better and before he makes a comment like that. Because I think, frankly, he's talking out of his shorts. Yeah. You know, he loves T. Martin, and that's great. But what he's saying is frankly not totally true.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because I think Danny White's task was, I'm going to find the best guy for the job. It doesn't matter if they're black, white, red, green, blue. Doesn't matter. He was going to find the right person for the job. And in his mind, that's what he did. And we're going to see if he's the right guy for right now. Said it earlier. He can come in with his plan and try and turn this around. And 3 years from now, you know, who knows the conversation that we're going to be having about this program. But, you know, back to T. Martin, we'll see if Josh Heupel feels like he should be a part of his staff. Again, it doesn't feel like he's going to. He has no obligation to do that just because, like I said earlier, just because you played there doesn't, you know, automatically open the door for you to be a coach there. That just,
well, and
that
goes for any sport. And if you think about it, he's talking about coming into a program that's about to get hit, we think, with heavy NCAA sanctions. So characteristically, customarily, you wouldn't want to touch anybody on that staff with a 10-foot pole unless you know for sure that they weren't part of the violations.
Exactly. And I know that, you know, T. Martin he turned down, you know, more money and all that stuff during the pandemic. I mean, it would appear that he has done things on the up and up, but it's a very, very good point by you. Speaking of the former regime, I do want to close out the hour with this because this is just fantastic. Jeremy Pruitt, the former Vols head coach, reportedly is going to join the New York Giants as a defensive assistant. Now, why do I think that's so funny? Not because he's going to the NFL, but because Derek Dooley is on the other side of the ball as an offensive assistant. So two former Vols coaches, two very bad former Vols coaches, now with the Giants.
Love to be a fly on the wall with their first conversation.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine just, hey, Coach Pruitt, you know, so tell me.
What'd they give you for a buyout, Jeremy? Oh, sorry.
Right, yeah. Like, oh, well, mine was this and mine was that. Yeah, I can only imagine the stories they're going to swap. And, you know, good luck. Good luck to the Giants. Again, as a Cowboys fan, hey, I'll take it. They can have them.
You know, real quick, and I know we got to go to a break, but sort of the antithesis of Tennessee's program played out yesterday with Northwestern giving Coach Fitzgerald a 10-year extension. And it just shows you. You want to talk about the epitome of continuity and everything else. You know, it's pretty remarkable that's a guy, you know, Pat Fitzgerald, who played at Northwestern, has stayed at Northwestern. His name gets mentioned every time a job comes up, and I don't think he's ever going to leave there. So, you know, Northwestern is really the polar opposite of Tennessee when it comes to head coaches.
Yeah, that's the best part of that. I don't think they had to make it a 10-year extension. I don't think he was going to leave anyway.
Yeah, well.
But you know, money's a good thing. Money talks, for sure. But, yeah, certainly an interesting story. Teron Davenport, ESPN Titans NFL Nation reporter, has been in Mobile covering the Senior Bowl. We'll get the latest from there with him when we come back here on Stillman & Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game.